This is John Malkin, and you are listening to The Great Leap Forward. This program is dedicated to exploring social change and spiritual growth, compassion, and anarchy. You can hear this program every Wednesday night at 7 p.m. on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM. And on the internet at www.freakradio.org. This evening you'll hear a very special interview with Tibetan monk Paldin Gyatso. Paldin Gyatso was born in a Tibetan village in 1933 and became an ordained Buddhist monk at 18, just as Tibet was in the midst of political upheaval. In 1967, the Chinese destroyed monasteries across Tibet and forced thousands of monks into labor camps and prisons. Paldin Gyatso spent the next 25 years of his life enduring interrogation and torture simply for the strength of his beliefs. Paldin Gyatso's story bears witness to the resilience of the human spirit and to the strength of Tibet's proud civilization faced with cultural genocide. Paldin Gyatso is the author of The Autobiography of a Tibetan Monk, and this interview took place at the Land of Medicine Buddha in SoCal, California. Paldin Gyatso, I want to thank you for sitting here with me. I am grateful that you have agreed to do this interview. Thank you.
Yes, he.
I think that originally when you first went to prison, it was because of your participation in the Tibet uprising, the uprising for a free Tibet. And you wrote in your autobiography about pasting up posters calling for a free Tibet during those first days of the Tibetan uprising in Lhasa in 1958. I'd like to hear a little about the uprising in 1958 in Lhasa.
That particular day, 1959, on the 10th of March, I happened to be in downtown Lhasa. And when I was there in downtown Lhasa, what I witnessed was Tibetan people totally burst into chaos, and so many people are marching towards the Nubulinga, which is His Holiness Dalai Lama's summer palace. And a lot of them, again, in the parkour in Lhasa, and protesting against Chinese, asking China to leave out of Tibet, and also claiming Tibet is part of China, Tibet is not part of China, and Tibet is an independent nation, and please China leave Tibet. That was the very peaceful demonstration a lot of people have organized and happening like that. At the same time, the Tibetan people were very, very concerned and very scared because the Chinese have already given invitation to His Holiness Dalai Lama to attend at the dinner party, which is a military camp. And at that time, Tibetans were already very, very suspicious because of their past, what they have done. So Tibetans are requesting His Holiness Dalai Lama to please not to attend this meeting because the Chinese have already given, order, saying that His Holiness can come only with one attendant and nothing, nobody else. Since His Holiness is very compassionate and very loving, he is very humble and trying to attend the Chinese meeting. And that meeting was very, very, actually, a lot of Tibetans have already understood that it could be his assassination plan. So I was there, so I also joined the rest of protesters. As I'm a Tibetan, and it behooves me, and I have peacefully, voluntarily joined the peaceful march and protest against Chinese invasion.
Paldin Gyatso, you were a monk. You became a monk at the age of 10 and lived in a monastery in Tibet. And when the Chinese invaded Tibet, some monks attempted to defend their monasteries with guns. I wonder what your feeling was about that, and do you feel that nonviolence is always the best way of dealing with conflict.
Since we are really a Buddhist practitioner, and our whole culture and politics and overall everyday life involves with the Buddha Dharma, which is the core of developing compassion, with that in our mind, to harm someone is very, very hard to swallow and hard to understand. From my point of view, I can understand the desperate situation of Tibet, especially threatening the life of His Holiness Dalai Lama, which every Tibetan cherishes Holiness Dalai Lama more than our own life. Seeing this kind of desperate situation, I can understand not only laypersons, even the monks and nuns have tried to protect the rights of our own people, and especially the lives of His Holiness Dalai Lama.
You spent 33 years in prison from the time you were 28 years old to when you were 61 years old. Tell me a little about the conditions in the prisons in Tibet where you were being held.
The brutality of Chinese treatment inside prison, not just monks, regardless of gender and age, is tremendous suffering that cannot be measured by everyday human people. But if I explain all of it, we don't have time, and I have written a book called Autobiography of a Tibetan Monk. In that, I have written very precisely. But if I if I summarize them, for example, we have to do a physical work, and they're not just any kind of physical works, literally putting a wooden yoke on human's neck, and we have to drag the wooden floor on the field, like 9 hours a day. On top of that, only food we have been provided is a one thin barley soup that literally you can see your face and there's no sign of any grease. And on top of that, the torture, the investigation or interrogation during those times, the torture is immense, that we've been totally ripped naked in front of people and tied our hands and legs and tied on our behind our neck and made almost like a ball out of a human being. And then on top of that, they have beaten with the leather belt or rod, iron rod or sticks. And not only that, pour a hot steamy water on our skin and also burn fire beneath our naked body and put us on a ceiling and hanging on a ceiling and beating ruthlessly. Moreover, they have used electrical catapults in a woman's womb and man's throat and mouth. And I, for example, myself was totally beaten in 1990 in September 13th in a prison called Tabji prison that totally took out all my teeth and put electrical catapult on my throat. Such this kind of total inhuman brutal tortures being done to not just for me, many people, and so many people did not survive these tortures. And very few like myself, now it become our utmost responsible to speak in all those people did not meet in their behalf. And I don't have any joy of speaking this terrible, terrible suffering that our brothers and sisters went through. But it seems like it is my duty to speak in their behalf.
When you escaped from Tibet into Nepal and later to India, you carried with you one bag. Tell me about what was in the bag and why you felt it was so important to bring those things out of Tibet.
So in that bag, I have been able to smuggle by the help of many other brothers and sisters to show the world that what kind of ill treatment, ill torture that my brothers and sisters, monks and nuns of all Tibet, Upper Tibet, Lower Tibet, Central Tibet, have gone through under the Chinese invasion. And those are torture weapons, such as handcuffs and many different sizes of handcuffs, different sizes of electrical catapults, and different iron that has been used, iron rod that has been used to beat us and to shock us, and even tear gas All those things, equipments are in that bag.
You have testified before the United Nations Commission on Human Rights and the United States House International Relations Committee and other government committees. Has there been positive action taken by these groups as a result of your testifying?
Yes, I got the privilege and honor to speak in Geneva in front of the United Nations, as well as many U.S. Representatives. And especially I'm traveling all around the world and also in the United States, speaking in front of colleges, high schools, and MS International groups, human rights groups, environmental groups. All those things literally benefit me because it really gives a great understanding of what exactly happened in Tibet. And not only that, what exactly happened on those prisoners' wall. So many of people in West and in Europe have heard about Tibet, but they did not heard the vivid story of Tibet. And there are a lot of people who have never heard about Tibet. So for them, I'm becoming like an educator or a messenger that what exactly happened. With that, a lot of people are very sympathetic and very caring, and we gain more and more support from individual people. And with that, we have more and more organizations that are supporting for the cause of Free Tibet.
In your book, Autobiography of a Tibetan Monk, you wrote that my religious training brought me peace of mind. Physical restraints were only the outward sign of imprisonment. I still had the power to give my thought free rein. How did you deal with physical and mental pain and anxiety? And what from your Buddhist monastic trainings did you find useful and practical when you were in prison?
You're very precisely right. It seems like you really read my book thoroughly, and I appreciate really appreciate. And yes, I have mentioned in my book, likewise, I have the same thought even today, that even though physically they have put me in prison, yes, mind is always free. If person wants to be free, the mind cannot be captured by any sort of prison. So mind is always free. And during my imprisonment, even though all this torture, physical torture, it does not really, especially like they torture us by force, and of course we will have a natural reaction and rebellion. But overall, whenever, regardless of how much they torture, they cannot torture my mind. They cannot torture my inner peace. And that's not because I am a great learned or a great realized being. Not because of like that. I'm just a simple, ordinary monk. But I have at least studied Buddhist doctrine, and by the grace of my great teachers, like His Holiness Dalai Lama and my own teacher, Gerizin Tempa, because of their grace, I have reflected to Kyamto. Kyamto is refuge, and when I surrender myself with great devotion, and it has been said that once you surrender to the Three Jewels, it has a tremendous wisdom and knowledge to even to come and relieve you from the suffering of hell realm. So with this, these kind of things thoughts in my mind, I can immediately reflect that what is a imprisonment by the Chinese? It is a very it's a very minor thing compared to the hell realm. And then also another thing I have reflect on cause and effect, which is called karma, and lende dharma means really exercising how cause and effect, you know, how karma comes. You know, whenever you have do any sort of negative action, for that there is a reaction, and that reaction cannot be prevalent until that has been ripen. So I took voluntarily as a purification of my own negative karma. And with that, when you single-pointedly meditate or surrender yourself to the Three Jewels, those pain even diminishes. And even when there is a very blockage of space, it creates spacious. So that kind of great bliss I have really perceived during my hardship by totally exercising the doctrines or the philosophy of Buddhist study or Buddhist idea.
In Western psychology, we are taught that if we feel angry, it's sometimes healthy to release the anger by yelling or hitting a pillow to get it out. It's believed that anger about injustice can motivate one to take positive action to address suffering. If you're angry about injustice in the world, maybe you'll do something about it. I would like to hear you talk about your experience with anger, and you have said that you are not angry at the people who imprisoned and tortured you. How do you feel towards them, and what did you do to deal with anger during that time?
I have tried to discriminate my own anger. That doesn't mean that I don't have anger. Of course I have anger, especially I'm way out here in samsara, and I am a regular person like everybody else. So I have anger. But I try to reduce anger, or I try to discriminate anger, because Buddha have clearly said that the anger is the root of all suffering. And if we really look at in a modern sense, everyday life, you know, when the anger dominates our mind, even we lose our friendship, and even the wise person becomes blind and make terrible, terrible mistakes, like killing, for example. And once the anger took over, we cannot see the consequences of future. We can't see any future. So then when we kill people, then we have to go through all kinds of terrible punishment, because whenever there is a land, there's a rule of the land. Likewise, in a bigger sense, out of anger and out of not able to let go of one's own selfish nature, we are out of greed, or whatever many reasons, out of greed or out of hatred or revenge, this, continuation of war and conflict that exists in our world is because of not able to discriminate or dispel the enemy that lies within us. Because of that, I try my best, because I wear this robe and I am supposed to be a spiritual practitioner. And as I advise from a great masters of all time, it has been clearly mentioned that the root of suffering is anger.
In the autumn of 1971, when you were in prison, there were some other prisoners who were taken into an office, and they didn't know, but they were about to be told that they would be executed. They were going to be sentenced to death. One of them was the abbot of a monastery, and when he was told of his execution, he wept and begged for mercy. And another man who you saw who was sentenced to death, Pema Dondon, he was a layperson with no meditation training, and when they told him that he was going to be killed, he was going to be executed, he told the Chinese officer, "Thank you." And you write about this in your book, and you were quite surprised, and even more surprised when Pema went on to say, "It is good to have a long, happy life, but even better to have a short, unhappy one." And you write about wondering yourself how it is that Pema faced death with such courage, while the monk who had devoted his life to the contemplation of death and the belief that his physical being was nothing but an impermanent mass became so distraught, pleading for mercy. What are your thoughts about these two different responses to death?
Yes, this is precisely true. Sometimes we've been deceived by our own judgment that one who is abbot and wearing a monk's robe and have written so many literatures, and we assume that he or she have a better understanding of a phenomena, or so to say, he or she is more awakened, so that he can see past and future more clearly, or to say, have a broader view to see the the picture overall, the whole picture. But and also on the other hand, we have a notion that the layperson have not studied or have not meditated, so he or she might have more clinking towards the everyday life. So especially layperson have their children and wife, so maybe thinking, oh, he might beg for his life because he have all this samsara behind him. But actually, whenever the Chinese are executing us, they will have a letter, and on that particular letter, we have to sign. We have to sign or sign. And that letter actually saying that I am guilty of not obeying to the Chinese authority, and so I have from now onward I lost all my rights and I am subjected to be executed. And for that statement you have to sign. So when it turn come to the abbot was literally actually begging and freaking out, and he failed to see the time and the space at that time. And whereas the late man, he immediately was actually at that time, it was amazing that he was able to see the past, how to say, time and the space. He already recognized that there is no space left for him. He's going to die anyway. Why don't he die with dignity? So he, by seeing that, he immediately said a very cliche of Tibetan saying that if life is prosper and good, it is good to have a long life. If life is miserable, then it's better to have a shorter life. And with saying that statement, he immediately said, bring me the pen and paper. I'm happy and I'm thankful to you because I want to die instantly, but I'm more happy to die instantly than live under your lies and torture. So he immediately went. I really, really, from my point of view, that was amazing because it shows his dignity and his courage and heroism. And all I have to say is I admire, not only admire, I dedicate his action. Also, I rejoice his action. On the other hand, and his name is Pema Tunden, the layperson's name. Even though he died, the Pema Tunden is died, but his unprecedented, courageous action still lies. Still is life. It is life because I am speaking today here, and also I have written in my book. Mm-hmm. And there are so many men and women that has did not got opportunity to speak their stories. On this particular statement, it clearly actually shows black and white, regardless of Chinese propaganda, how beautiful Tibetan lifestyle in Tibet is. Actually, this particular statement saying that if life is joy and prosper, it is good to have a long life. And if life is miserable and painful, it is better to die, better to have a shorter life and die instantly. That clearly showing the weight of the conversation, or so to say, it vivid the overall depth thoughts of Tibetan people, the suffering, the very height of suffering is showing clearly from this statement.
When you were in prison and in the labor camps, you and the other prisoners were forced to be part of struggle sessions and reward and punishment sessions, and you were forced to read Mao's Little Red Book, and I think you memorized a lot of it and had to recite it and sing songs. You wrote in your book, The Autobiography of a Tibetan Monk, that you began to despise the Communist Party in China. And you wrote that the party claimed to be serving poor people, even as it sent thousands to their deaths. Do you think that the communist takeover and the Cultural Revolution in China came out of good intentions and positive motivations that then went wrong? Or do you feel that the original intentions were unhealthy and destructive and hateful?
This is all propaganda and lie. From the very beginning of entering into Tibet, even though they come in the name of liberation and they come in the name of that we're going to develop Tibet and we will leave Tibet later, but that whole thing was a cunning idea. There was no any involvement or good motivation.
It reminds me, a lot of people have the same idea about the United States, saying that it wants to help people around the world, and yet the military of the United States has often ended up bombing and killing people. It brings to mind, too, a question about politics and religion. In the United States, a lot of people feel strongly that politics, the government, and religion should be separate. What is your view on that?
Yes, there's no dilemma about the Chinese have very cunningly made a plan, and they came in the name of liberation. But instead of liberation, they have, even if we talk about today, it's almost to the edge that Tibetans, very existence of the Tibetan has been threatened. So it is like totally opposite of what they said. But when you are comparing that to U.S. invasion of military occupation in different countries, I have a little bit of discomfort to make any sort of statement. The first and foremost thing is I myself is very limited in American policy and American diplomat, American history, all those things. On top of that, I cannot read a sentence of English, or I cannot understand, because if I don't have ins and outs of its all information, it will not be wise to me to make any kind of statement. So I ask your excuse. I don't know what to say on this regard.
And what about the idea of government and religion being separate?
I think different countries have different choices. So like Americans choose to separate these two different entities, whereas Tibetan have a great saying that religious and political bond together.
How many political prisoners are there now in Tibet, and what are the conditions like for them?
It is very hard to give you the number of total number of inmates in Tibet right now, because the Chinese are very, very strict about their secrecy. But I can say that much, that there's so many prisons all over Tibet. It's like almost like countless prisons everywhere in Tibet. But when I came out of prison in 1992, in one particular prison that I have lived in Tabji prison, there were more than 42 inmates. They are monks, nuns, laypersons, men and women, all together. That I can say, that particular year in that particular prison. That was in 1992. But today, when I put my ear out there and try to get information from people, recent arrival Tibetans, in that particular prison, right now there's more than 150 inmates. Overall, if I count all kinds of degrees of those who are going to be sentenced to death and sentenced to be executed, and also those who are in long-term prison, all those I total, it seems like there are more than 4,000 inmates.
What role did Amnesty International and other human rights organizations play in your release from prison?
It seems like my appeal was started 1983 by MS International, as well as many other governmental and non-governmental organizations. They appeal not only for me, but for other people too. But specifically myself, seems like my registration was named, or my name was registered in Italian MS International, and after their constant appeal, I was able to come out of prison after 8 or 9 years of their appeal or their application in 1992. That also, I didn't know about that people are appealing on my behalf. I only realized after I came out. So in 1992, after I escaped from Tibet and came to Dharamsala, there was a BBC TV interviewers or journalists. They rushed to me and asked many interview or many questions, and it has been broadcast, of course, worldwide. And then the people in Italy, they saw that news, and then immediately they realized that their person has been released, and then immediately they fly out to Dharamsala, and then they said, we are the particular office that have appealed on your behalf, and our organization name is called the in Tibetan it sounded like it's like to reducing the sentences. Their specialty is to reduce the sentences in political prisons, or especially the prisoners of conscience. So he immediately they rushed, and they were very concerned about my health, and they also bring a lot of medication for me. And this is how I realized that how outside world, with the great sympathy and care, appeal on my behalf.
While you were imprisoned in a labor camp in 1978, you and Lobsang Wangchuk wrote a 19-page petition of grievances about the prison, things that they wanted changed in the prison. And Lobsang pasted this on the side of a government building in Lhasa. And that was the first wall poster to appear in Lhasa after the death of Mao. And later in 1982, you snuck into the center of Lhasa, the capital of Tibet, and pasted a poster on the wall of the government's military office. Tell me about these direct actions that you were taking to improve the conditions in the labor camp.
With Lobsang Onsula and myself, when we put up the posters, at that time we were inmates in one particular prison. At the same time, His Holiness Dalai Lama's representative, Chigyab Abbot, he was actually visiting Tibet.
And
this representative, all the Tibetans were really, really loving to see these representatives. At the same time, these representatives are very much affectionate towards the Tibetan people. The idea came about because of the His Holiness Dalai Lama representative in Tibet. And even though so many Tibetan men and women are very, very courageous and have many different informations to give it to this representative, yet, Losa Wojula and Paldela, being more experienced and elder, they felt like maybe a lot of them will fail to report the precise of the condition in Tibet. So, keeping that in mind, they started writing so that if they put outside the market, then he will learn about it. So that's why he put it up there.
And
when I bring up this idea, and Lobsang Onjula immediately give me support. He said, this idea is a great idea.
Ini entah ngarang ni mah tu, entah macam dah lakukan ilah jua mari sebiji. Ini yang kami hazuan, ini ayah gua mari sungguh.
Especially to report inside prison what is going on. So he as soon as he give him give a cooperation, immediately they made a decision that just two of us, no more. Because whenever there's more people, it is very likely to get the news out before action taking place.
Ini yege sindi kapsa yege se.
So when we wrote the letter, I have no any kind of doubt. He is a great, wonderful person whose heights of knowledge are immeasurable. So I have total faith. So we wrote together.
In Tindegi, Kielapanya, any Chokotunya, Tindutunguya, Marikin Kuran Kapachamuris.
There is no necessary for me to give suggestion because he is a great learner, so I totally trusted him what he will write.
Yine tapche kola yine shongdea masuni cheche ini tsunga nang yidu tani lela buyo maresmi hakona lamja ini kemi tjures.
But since we are in such a tight situation inside prison, so I give my helping hand to how to go about it to better to discuss two people, then so we for precautious, yes, I have given him words and how to go about it.
Any ta la sala ya ge e cha che ta thap chi mang bu che bre che san ti ko ri ne ta shib te thap chi chi lu chi da chi lu che bu ne ya mi kha chi pha ge wa re che ta di ne in ni shu me.
And also it is not just two of us, there are a lot of things need to be counted before we go on action like that. But I don't want to say precisely because some of people are still remain in Tibet and it will jeopardize them.
Any nyadun dile tene yeng ko ku koran la ni yeg jab ko ku koran la lo sang won ju dang ani gi cha sang ni min kyab yar.
Not only that, because of this to protect other, on that letter we have even written our name beneath that and sign it up so that no other people will suffer out of our action. So then they came to interrogate us. So when they interrogate us, we have given an answer is because there is a booklet about the constitution of the communist authority, particularly in that those area. And in that constitution it says you have right to protest, you have right to write complaints, you have right to put posters. And then we nailed to them that these are the constitution that you have written in your own language. So then they still they captured first the venerable Lobsang Wangchula. So he was thrown in prison in Gutsa. So then Venerable Lobsang Wangchula sent me a message from there, from Gutsa prison. So then the Chinese authority went to the Gutsa prison to Venerable Lobsang Wangchula and telling him that now you are stuck in this prison. At the same time, your partner, Paldin Gyatso, has been house arrested, that he can't go anywhere. But only two of you were the only activists. The rest of Tibetan are enjoying a great peace and happy because they are all agreeing with our thought reform, so to say, and they are all enjoying the freedom that we have given. So you are the only two anti-government. So that kind of how to say manipulative thoughts they're trying to put in his mind. The message was the Venerable Wangchul are saying that they are putting these kind of thoughts in my mind, and this is what they are telling me, that you are already house arrested, and the rest of Tibetans are not bothering, or they didn't care because they're enjoying freedom. So I know this is not fact. So I'm already in prison, but you're out there and saying you go ahead and put as many as posters you can, and don't let this be a week for your don't let this stop what you are going to do.
Any
So I'm more like house arrested, but it's a little bit different than the prison. There was not many guards for me. So when I received a message from my dear friend, I immediately started writing, posters. And I wrote in a very hidden way during daytime, go in a big field and write them so that nobody else can see. And after all, when I finished writing them, I know that in that town, the light goes out every day on midnight because it is a generated electricity. So he have precisely timed the time, when he should arrive in the town. So, from Netang to the head office of the communist military, it's about 25 minutes driving. So Paldanla immediately timed everything, and he started walking with all his posters and the glues on his back, and doing mantra, and walked all the way up to the courthouse or the head office of the military. And then at the time when he reached there, it was perfect midnight, and every light went out. So he put all the posters and he walked back again all the way. By the time he walked back to the Netang, it was just a sun was just before breaking the sun. So he went in his bed and pretended that he was sleeping all night. That's how he did it. That's how he have been able to put the posters to the head office of the military.
I guess a lot of people feel like if they want to be happy, they should do nice things for themselves. There's an idea in Buddhism, in Buddhist psychology, that you become happy and free by serving others and dedicating your actions to others. Mm-hmm. What is the relationship between?
Yes, there's a little bit of relation, but it's, in another hand, it can be explained like Hinayana and Mahayana. Also, within the Hinayana, there is a verse that can describe about three types of practitioner. One is small, one is medium, one is the greater. So then the small one, for example, the person who is totally, wrapped into perceiving or having enjoyment just for self. First one is, for example, one who is seeking just for rapture of self. And that is considered as a law. And the second one is medium. The reason he is medium is he who have understood the meaningless of worldly activity and also willing to perceive a greater happiness, and understanding these two facts, so he is considered a mediocre person. The greatest person among these three, of course, Padilla have total memorized of these verses, and there's no way my English is good enough to totally translate the whole verses, but I will try my best to, bring out the nitty-gritties of the meaning. So this one is the one who have not understood the cause of suffering and also understood almost like the emptiness or the meaningless of worldly activity. Not only that, just as I want to perceive enjoyment and liberation, so as other. That kind of equanimity, that kind of understanding, with that pursuing for the benefit of other, developing the heart of bodhicitta to become enlightenment for the benefit of other. Not only that, in everyday life, every action being taken so that others don't have to suffer, because you yourself, because the others are just as same as yourself who wants to experience happiness and don't want to experience suffering. That kind of depth of understanding and pursuing action motivated with the compassion, that kind of person is called the most sublime, the most supreme person, the practitioner, so to say, three different types of practitioner.
What's the most important thing that you learned being imprisoned for so long?
Yes, I have gained a lot of experience. Among all this experience, there are two most important things. The first one is I realized that it is how important and how crucial it is to have one's nation be free and have rights for its people. For example, if you look at the situation of Tibet, since we lost our nation, at the same time we lost all our rights. Even just now we are screaming that Tibetan people in Tibet don't have a human rights, don't have a religious freedom. All these things happen because we lost our freedom. And with that, we lost our rights. So I realized that how important it is for every sentient being or all beings to have its nation be free and have a rights for its nation. For example, in America, you enjoy tremendous freedom of religious freedom, of study, freedom of ideology. All these things you have, the existence of these things is first and foremost thing is you have your independence. Because of that, rest all come about. So these are the full indication that the nation is free, so as its people have a right to be free. And the second thing is, I realized, just as Buddha have said, that the anger is your worst enemy, and that was very precisely and vividly came to my mind, that out of anger, out of hatred, out of jealousy, out of selfish nature, a human being suffers. According to the Buddhist doctrine, there's no greater sin than anger. In other hand, in a modern sense or in everyday life, when the anger bursts and you are ready to hit or discriminate somebody, when you do that, oftentimes you are not able to hit or challenge that person, but on top of that, you yourself build up and wrapped up in anger, and when that comes, you destroy your own peace, and you also accumulate great negative karma. And as a monk, it behooves me to discriminate anger, because anger is the root of all suffering. And out of anger, one could destroy all other merits that you have accumulated. So anger needed to be discriminated. And I try, of course I have anger, but as a religious practitioner, if I cannot discriminate or cut the root of the ignorant or root of the suffering, then there's no way out that I will become enlightenment. So since we are seekers of enlightenment, so it behooves us to understand the root of that suffering and then try to discriminate from the root. So because of that, in my book, Autobiography of a Tibetan Monk, I have given forgiveness as well as I have tolerance for people who have tortured me. I don't have any anger towards any Chinese government, as well as even individuals, those who have tortured me. I have mentioned that I don't have anger. The reason I have mentioned and I try for tolerance and forgiveness is because by holding grudge and developing anger will do nothing good, but it will destroy my own peace and also it will destroy my own merit. So because of that, I have a tolerance. Because of the bliss of Buddhist doctrine, I am able to at least try and discriminate my own anger. My book has been now able to publish in the Chinese language, and it is tremendous delight for me because the Chinese brothers and sisters, they need to know what exactly happened in China, in Tibet by the Chinese communist regime, because a lot of Chinese are very, very innocent. And they don't know other than what the communist regime have said or allowed to read. So in my book, I have clearly differentiated the ordinary Chinese or Chinese brothers and sisters different than the communist regime or communist military ideology. I have separated them. Because of that, the publisher were very, very joyful and very understanding, and they were very, very thankful. And I, at the same time, very, very happy and thankful for them for understanding the differences. And there's no way, like myself, as well as all the Tibetan, doesn't discriminate all Chinese. We are only against the communist regime and the communist ideology and the people who are torturing. And because of that, I think they have published my book in Chinese, and I'm very, very joyful about it.
Paldin Gyatso, I want to thank you very, very much for speaking with me. I am grateful for this opportunity, and I know that the work that you're doing is benefiting many, many people all over the planet, and I have the hope that this interview will also benefit people.
Actually, I should thank you for giving this opportunity. And also, the reason I am traveling at this age and don't see any sort of difficulty is because I've been fired by the people of all age and all gender. Pochokasum refers to the three direction people of Tibet. That means upper, lower, and central Tibet. So many men and women did not survive, and they died in this interrogation time. They died in this prison. Some died out of starvation, some died by execution, and these great, great people's story been almost lost in those walls. And people like myself who were survived, it behooves us and it become my responsibility, so there's nothing that I feel tired about. So whenever I get opportunity, I'm more pleased and thrilled to share what exactly happened inside Tibet. So I sincerely thank you for giving this opportunity.
And Rigsin Thinke, thank you very, very much for interpreting. I know it must take a lot of energy, and I appreciate it. I wouldn't have been able to do this without you. Thank you very much. I'm grateful.
Thank you.
You've been listening to an interview with Paldin Gyatso, author of The Autobiography of a Tibetan Monk. This interview was recorded February 6th, 2004 at the Land of Medicine Buddha in SoCal, California. My name is John Malkin, and this has been The Great Leap Forward. This program can be heard every Wednesday night on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Free Radio Santa Cruz broadcasts 24 hours a day on 101.1 FM and www.freakradio.org. Our mailing address is P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Our voicemail number is 831-427-4523, and the studio number is 427-FRSC. I would like especially to thank the translator for this interview with Paul D'Ingiazzo, Rixin Thinke, and also a special thanks to Skidmark Bob for production and editing.